It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you here on this Friday, and what a week it has been. Filled with news as always, but some really serious stuff happening this week. But before I get into that, let me just tell you that it's almost Christmas. In case you didn't notice, it's almost Christmas. It's time to think about, you know, decorating your house, whether you're going to have company, gifts you're going to buy. But the other thing you can be thinking about is ways to talk about what this actually means. It's kind of an interesting thing to live in America right now, understanding that it really is actually pagan culture, where people around you may never really have heard the story of Jesus. That wasn't the case when I was a girl. Everybody heard it. They just didn't accept it. Not so anymore. And so with that, AFA is offering these beautiful Christmas wristbands that say, keep Christ in Christmas. Keep Christ in Christmas. And we will send you a set of those. Of course, they're cheap, so don't worry about the price. You can afford them. And they're a great gift to give to your friends and neighbors, your Sunday school class, in a store, whatever you'd like to do. You can get them at the AFA store. It's afastore.net, afastore.net, or you can call 877-927-4917, 877-927-4917, and get your Christmas wristbands to wear and to share. And then also for those of you that are working to help us get these shoeboxes to these children who are in countries around the world where they just can't even comprehend the opulence in which we live. They have a lot of needs, and they don't have a lot of treats and fun things. And so these Christmas shoe boxes under the Samaritan's Purse, it's called Operation Christmas Child, where we box up the shoe boxes and fill them with really fun things. You can choose a boy or a girl. It's not that much. It doesn't cost that much. And actually, it's easy to send because all you do is take them to collection sites. And by the way, Collection Week is this week because we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks. So the 13th through the 20th, which we're coming up on the end here, are the days you can drop these boxes off. So if you want to find the closest collection site next to you, go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. And, you know, I have to say, if your church is not participating, and I bet they are, many churches are, maybe you should talk to your church about it for next year so that it would be easier for you to drop off your box. You could help encourage more people to join and get involved with it. SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. Well, it's hard to believe, but it was really only about a week ago when all of the allegations against Justice Roy Moore, former head of the Supreme Court in Alabama, a champion to many people in the Christian world for certain, for his courage, his commitment to Christ, his powerful messages, his quoting of Scripture, his knowledge of the Constitution, his valor. And he's paid a price many times through the years, through his public life, for taking a stand. So it was a shock to many of us to hear the allegations by the Washington Post that Judge Moore, according to their narrative, was inappropriate, and even some one of the reports is that he was very inappropriate with a 14-year-old girl. That's her story. And so that was the narrative all week. It was interesting to see how people responded to that. You know, on part of the ledger were people who've known Justice Moore for a number of years and know about his career, his character, and just fighting for him, fighting because they believed in his character, because he had lived his life in such a way to disprove those kinds of allegations. On the other side was, it seemed like, the rest of the world, whether it was press, media, I don't know, Republican operatives, which we'll get into in just a second. I just picked one clip to remind you. This was Jesse Watters on Fox, who, you know, don't we love Jesse? Isn't he fun? Isn't he clever? Well, this is what he had to say about Justice Moore.
We were right about it from the very beginning. The guy looks like a holy roller hypocrite. This isn't just a he said, she said when it involves minors, and now it's risen to the level of alleged sexual assault. We're hearing reports about him signing high school girls' yearbooks when he's in his 30s. He allegedly was banned from malls because he was trying to pick up teenagers. It just gets more and more gory and disgusting, and I feel terrible for the victims if it's true, which it looks like. These are very credible allegations, as the House Speaker said.
All right, so Jesse's thought is that we were right about this all along. Here are the allegations, and if they're true, which none of that makes sense, really, because no one's had time to vet out those allegations. This week, Justice Moore's attorneys filed a lawsuit against the Alabama Press for defamation, and they allege that the signing of that yearbook of the last accuser, who appeared with Gloria Aldred just a few days ago, was not genuine, was fake, was forged. And so the ink is not yet dry. The evidence is probably not quite all in. And yet Jesse really is just representative of the wave of condemnation that's been kind of interesting, not just kind of scary. Talk about scary. Talk about creepy. This has been creepy because I think it shows the underbelly of how the establishment, whether it's media or political, really view people, like Jesse said, holy rollers, people who actually take their faith seriously, who speak out, who fight. That's really how they feel, holy rollers, that they must be stopped at all costs. And so we know that Senate leadership and House leadership jumped on the bandwagon. I want you to hear what Mitch McConnell had to say.
I think he should step aside.
Are you encouraging a write-in campaign with Senator Strange?
That's an option we're looking at, whether or not there is someone who could mount a write-in campaign successfully.
Or do you believe these allegations to be true?
I believe the women, yes.
All right, so he believes the women. He doesn't believe Judge Moore. Based on what? We don't know. And yet he's sure that Justice Moore may step aside. Of course, we know that the Washington Post endorsed the Democratic candidate in the Senate race in Alabama. We know that they're no fans of conservatives. And we know that Mitch McConnell has been saying for a long time that he wants to crush the Tea Party. That was the moniker at the time. But at the time, it was the strong conservatives in the Republican Party. He wanted to crush them. And we know that his pattern has been to destroy conservative candidates in primaries across the country. We've seen it happen time and time again, where millions of dollars come into the race. A lot of money coming in from Karl Rove's entity, from Mitch McConnell's PACs. And usually the pattern is that in the last few days, something salacious, horrible, shocking. It could be true. It could not be true. It could be partly true. It doesn't seem to matter. And it puts doubt in the minds of conservatives. And they get the, as I said before, sort of the ick factor. How could I support this person? Because, ick. You know, so they don't, if at the very least, it causes conservatives to stay home. And so then Paul Ryan had his say, too. Let's listen to what Speaker Paul Ryan had to say.
He should step aside. Number one, these allegations are credible. Number two, he should if he cares about the values and the people he claims to care about, then he should step aside.
Well, this is really interesting because then just a few days later, now, if he cares about the values and the people he said he cares about, then he should step aside. Justice Moore. Based on the allegations of these women, as reported by the Washington Post and Gloria Aldred, the reliable Gloria Aldred, that always reliable source of feminist angst. But I digress. And so Jackie Speier, who's a congresswoman from California, testified before a House committee this week about House abuses, sexual abuses towards staffers, other congresswomen. Well, I'll let you hear what Jackie had to say.
In fact, there are two members of Congress, Republican and Democrat, right now, who serve, who have been subject to review, or not have been subject to review, but have engaged in sexual harassment. These harasser propositions, such as, are you going to be a good girl, to perpetrators exposing their genitals, to victims having their private parts grabbed on the House floor.
Could I just say that Jackie Speier is talking about Congress now? Sitting congressman, House, Senate, and did you hear her say perhaps she didn't say it here. She did an interview with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press later that day after she testified before Congress. And she said that the House of Representatives has paid $15 million to alleged victims of sexual harassment by members of the House, sitting senators in recent years. About $15 million in the last 10 to 15 years. So she was pressed by Chuck Todd about this. She said she didn't know how many members were involved, but of course it has to be multiple members. She also said that the victims had to sign non-disclosure agreements. Let me read this. I'm reading this from an article by Joel Pollack. Speer described a one-sided investigative process that does everything to protect members of Congress and little to protect the rights of victims. Right now, it takes almost 90 days to be able to file a complaint. And before actually going through the mediation, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And then you are not represented by counsel, but the harasser, i.e. the senator, i.e. the congressman, is represented by the House of Representatives General Counsel. Did you catch that? And in talking to people on the Hill who know the system there, the thought is that there's no way that Speaker Ryan and Leader McConnell and even Nancy Pelosi don't know about this, don't know about the slush fund, don't know about the allegations, the accusations. So let's see what we have here. We have a situation where the leader in the Senate and the Speaker in the House are hiding, covering up sitting members and former members of the House and the Senate who have actually been evidently by their own peers decided they were guilty because they had to pay hush money to people that claimed abuse. And these victims had to sign a non-disclosure so they can't talk about it. But in the case of Justice Moore, what did Paul Ryan say? If Justice Moore holds the values and the people that he says he holds, then he needs to step aside. And of course, Mitch McConnell said something similar to that. So what's wrong with this picture, I'm asking? And doesn't it seem to make sense that Leader McConnell and Speaker Ryan and Nancy Pelosi should right now, right away, ASAP, name every single member of Congress who has been hush money was paid on their behalf because they acted out sexually toward any person in that vicinity who brought charges, was paid money to be quiet? Those names should be named, and those congresspersons, both in the House and in the Senate, should step aside, shouldn't they? I have it on good authority that at least two members of leadership are involved in this. Now, I don't know how many more, but I'm telling you, there's a rottenness in the bones. And I've said before, and I've said it this week, that I think that it's terrible when men are accused of things like this and they're innocent. I think the truth is important, and I think that victims should be protected, but so should men who are victims of false accusations. But in the case of this, we're talking about the fact that there was so much evidence that millions of dollars were paid to silence the victims and to cover for whatever it is these congresspersons did. And yet, with Justice Moore, with just allegations, no proof, they demand he step aside as though they are somehow the righteous arbiter of the future of men. And that somehow, okay, so I guess we have to conclude that there's a different standard in the House of Representatives and in the Senate than there is for someone that they hate and don't want to sit there under any circumstance. So I'm honestly, seriously demanding that they name names and ask them to step down. The standard must be consistent. I talked to you this week about what's happening in the country of Zimbabwe. You've heard more about it now. Robert Mugabe, a terrible dictator, was at least deposed, set aside, and so there may be some future hope in Zimbabwe. But there's another country in this hemisphere who's struggling in the midst of it and being helped by some leftists in our government, including Obama operatives. I want you to hear that story. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Well, it's incredible news, Sean, because now what we know for certain is that for a while now, the Department of Justice has been looking into all of these allegations, and not just Uranium One, but the Clinton Foundation, leaks out of the FBI, and the unmasking of Americans. These are huge subjects that we've been discussing here on the show, I mean, all year long. And now what we know is that they've been looking into it all year long as well. And these are congressional criminal referrals, which means that the Department of Justice now takes that one step further and goes to the FBI and says, look, can you look into this? What information can we find out to build cases? Is there something here?
All right, that was Sarah Carter of Circa. And Sarah has been one of the most reliable journalists, really, to me, recently coming into focus. Reliable. Everybody trusts Sarah, even if they don't like her. And she's been reporting faithfully on the very things we're hearing in the headlines this week, that Attorney General Sessions just testified this week that the Attorney General is, at least the Justice Department, is looking into so many of the things that we've been wondering about. But Mike Waller, my next guest, has an observation about this that I think is really interesting. And so I've asked him to join us. Let me just say that we're going to get into another topic in a second, but I want to introduce Mike because he is the vice president of Center for Security Policy, but his resume is fascinating. Mike is a journalist and investigative writer on national security affairs, including intelligence, counterintelligence, and counterterrorism-related issues. He's researched and written about political and psychological dimensions of terrorism, insurgency, and counterinsurgency. He's covered military affairs in the guerrilla wars of Central America and Colombia. I could go on and on. In the 80s, he infiltrated and disrupted Soviet international front organizations in the U.S. and Europe and wrote what is considered the definitive work on the political psychological support networks for the FMLN insurgency in El Salvador. And that's just a tiny bit of his resume. It's always a pleasure to talk to Mike, and so I welcome him to the show. Good morning, Mike.
Morning, Sandy.
Hey, all right. Now, this is not, you know, this is not necessarily your bailiwick, except observing the psychology of things is. And you made an important observation about these investigations, which I want you to share. It sounds simple, but it isn't.
It's really simple, and that is if we didn't have the free press and the alternative media that people like Sarah Carter represent, and then we didn't have the activist networks out there, the public citizens who were being very active, and then the groups that they support in Washington pushing on the elected members of Congress, then we'd never have these investigations in the first place.
Yeah, like okay, let's just give some examples. We have Sarah Carter, John Solomon. We have Judicial Watch. Where would we be without Judicial Watch right now with all the investigations into the Clinton chicanery?
Oh, everybody would be hiding behind it's classified. We'd never know any of these things. If it wasn't for Judicial Watch, they're constantly filing those Freedom of Information Act requests to get this stuff out into the public.
Yeah. And then we have our congressmen and just a handful of them. But they're hearing from their constituents, and it's kind of rising to the top, these investigations, don't you think?
Absolutely. It was just about a month ago that a small group of us went in to talk to members of the House leadership on Capitol Hill. And we said flat out, hey, we talked to a bunch of different committee chairmen, subcommittee chairmen, and they're all saying that Speaker Ryan and the rest of you aren't allowing them to hold hearings on these things. Why? And, of course, they denied it. But what that did was it challenged them. We said, okay, prove it. Give us a letter in writing that you're not blocking these investigations. Well, they wouldn't give us such a letter, but all of a sudden they're allowing the investigations.
Yeah, so that's what we're seeing, the fruits of that this week. And I guess the point here, Mike, for my audience is we should be encouraged. As discouraging as the daily news is, and it's plenty discouraging, the good news is that the people are having an effect. Our voices are being heard still. You know, Mike, when I think of what's happening to us as a country in terms of the loss of our freedom and our freedom to speak, I think of Venezuela. The good people of Venezuela who have fought and fought, and most recently when I was actually covering it more frequently, starving, hungry, fighting in the streets, and really they've been overcome for the moment, haven't they, the good people?
Oh, it's awful. And think of Venezuela. It was an established democracy, a wealthy, wealthy country, an advanced country. And then all of a sudden, a socialist dictator comes over and he tells people they can't say what they think, and he controls and controls and controls and takes away their rights, and we have the horror that we have now.
Well, and the point really to me is that we are not going to be exempt from that if we don't fight. Look, they fought too, sometimes truth prevails and sometimes it doesn't, and we're in a very dangerous place, don't you think?
In an extremely dangerous place, because you have the country so polarized where a lot of people want their free stuff and they want everybody else to pay for it, yet the people, the average working people who are being expected to pay for the free stuff are also having the fruits of their labor stolen from them. And they're also being intimidated and coerced into not being able to speak their minds and voice their concerns. So you get this polarization that the demagogues really love to encourage so they can take advantage of it and then smash the wonderful system that we have.
Mike, I'm guessing that with all of your writings and all of your experience with communism and other totalitarian movements, that this is probably a pattern. I mean, I think there are probably some, maybe it's a little different in, it varies, but it's the same but different, isn't it?
It's just like if you had architectural drawings of something, a template. You can fairly predict what's going to happen within certain variables just by looking at what it is, because it's human nature. So before it was communists and now socialists, but also jihadis, they work the same way and they use the same type of human psychology to intimidate the good-hearted people, to vilify and isolate the few really good-hearted people who really stand out and make a stand for themselves and for their cause, to destroy them as human beings and then make it impossible for most other people to support them, and then to make the weak middle cave in and almost always go over to the dark side.
Yeah, so same but different, but human nature never changes, and that's a part of what I don't think our side understands, Mike. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems when it comes to political warfare, the left, man, they're fabulous. And it seems to me that the right is clueless. Even the Republican, let's say let's assume, which is probably a misnomer, the Republican leadership is not on the right like some of us. But they don't seem to employ the same kind. The tactics that they seem to employ are against conservatives, not against the left. I don't see any smart moves against the left by a conservative leader. Do you?
No, and that not elected conservative leaders, no, because they're part of that weak center that can almost always be relied upon to do what the left wants. You've seen this throughout all of human history, going back to biblical times.
Do you think they're even aware that there's a warfare going on?
I think they are, because of the harshness with which they punish those who dare to speak out. You know, Paul Ryan punishes conservatives in Congress. He takes away their power as committee chairman. He prevents them from being elevated. He'll have campaign money withdrawn for them. The same with Mitch McConnell in the Senate, even worse because of Senate rules.
So they have their own methods of warfare, but they aim them at conservatives, not at the left. That's the point I was trying to make.
Right, because they've made common cause with the left because they stand to raise money off it, and they don't want to have nasty things written about them in the Washington Post, because it would harm their own self-esteem.
Before we leave this topic,
social standing.
Before we leave this topic, I just want to ask you, in your knowledge of history and the way these kinds of systems work, have you ever seen the good people, this is really simplistic language, but let's just metaphorically say the good people prevail and push back this wicked warfare that some of them may not even be aware of? Have you seen the good men prevail anywhere?
Oh, sure. When I was 18 years old, I cast my first vote for Ronald Reagan, and that was against the entire Republican and conservative and political establishment. His election in 1980 was viewed as a horror show. But think of all the good people who came out of the woodwork to get Ronald Reagan elected. So you had that and that whole Reagan revolution. And now you're seeing a different kind of resurgence of really frustrated good people who went and defied all the odds and destroyed all the conventional wisdom by electing Donald Trump. And while Trump is very different from Reagan, and he doesn't claim to be similar to him, he still has that same goodness about him, but it's in a harsher, less polite way. But he's in there to smash a lot of the bad things that are happening here. And as long as he knows, you follow the president's tweets and his public policies, as long as he knows that the public is behind him, there's no limit to what he won't do to try to do the right thing.
You know, it's interesting. After his election, some of us, many of us, mused that it was a shocking upset to the left. That's common knowledge. But to even think for a minute that they would just stop fighting, that they would say, all right, well, in the next 4 years, we're going to, you know, we'll take it back. And we knew instinctively that there would be something big in response. But honestly, Mike, I did not expect resistance. I didn't expect Antifa. I did not expect Black Lives Matter. I did not foresee any of that. With you and your experience, did you expect things like that to be taking place?
Yes. This was in the works for a very long time. You have a lot of the Antifa and especially Black Lives Matter militants include extremists from the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, who came here from the Middle East specifically to train people and to goad the police and to overreact and to shoot people. And that's only going to get worse. You have at the same time, on a different scale, a president who came in promising to drain the swamp. Now, what does that mean? His goal is to cut out a lot of the colossal waste and fraud and abuse that Congress routinely funds every year. In fact, they're about to do it again. To fund this giant swamp. I mean, Washington, D.C. is one of the wealthiest areas of the country, with more mansions per capita in the D.C. area than almost anywhere else in the country. Yet there's no industry here in Washington, except government. So it's all tax dollars coming in and being spent. And ultimately, you've got these very expensive, beautiful neighborhoods and mansions and everything, but it's all built on the backs of the taxpayer. That has to stop. But when you have a president who says that's going to stop, you're taking away this wealthy livelihood from a large number of extremely influential people. And they are going to fight back, even if it means looking the other way when the real extremists like BLM and Antifa and others start wrecking the country.
You know, Mike, I think a lot of us sense that Donald Trump understands kind of instinctively. He has really good instincts. But do you think that he has been briefed? And he's a quick study. People that say he's dumb just don't. I just don't think they have a clue when they've criticized him on his trip to Asia and not giving him credit really for. I think he's very crafty and knowledgeable. I don't think he knows everything. But do you think he has any insight into the depth of this warfare here back at home?
No, I know he was surprised at exactly how much of a challenge it is to be president of the United States. It's not like running a company where you can just say, change that, make that happen, do this, don't do that. He's finding it to be a very different world for him. But he is not getting the briefings that he needs because he did not assemble the national security team that he needed to keep him informed this way. And that was, as even Steve Bannon said, that was a early cardinal sin of the Trump administration when they did not pay attention to personnel. So you see the president and the country are paying the cost for that now, but you also see the president is starting to learn from that as well, and he's looking a lot to other people now. He's calling out to some of the really solid members of Congress now for help and advice.
Well,
he really does pay attention to his Twitter feed, believe it or not. He follows, if you look at who he's following on Twitter, he only follows 45 people. Half of them are his family members and his businesses, but he's following some of our favorite media people on Twitter, and that's how he gets his information. So you can reach him through that, and when he sees that, he acts.
Isn't that interesting? This is such a unique time. It really is, Mike. It's just pretty stunning. And to the point that the Trump presidency has made some colossal mistakes in personnel, and I've certainly talked about that a lot at this microphone, that reminds me of what I want to ask you about next, which sounds like a U-turn, but it isn't. This is actually, I have to say, in full disclosure, I heard you do a private briefing on this, and I was fascinated. But it has to do with the Trump administration, with a member of his national security team, but it also affects really all of us. So let me just say this. We just have a few minutes to at least start the conversation. Guatemala, it's a Central American country, and I don't think most Americans, unless they're Guatemalan, have a lot of interest in what goes on in Guatemala. Why should they care before we describe what's happening there?
Right, especially when you think Russia, China, North Korea, who cares about little tiny Guatemala? But look at it on the map. It's a keystone in the illegal immigration chain up from Central and South America into Mexico to the United States. It's that same keystone for illegal narcotics land routes up to the United States. So it's a vital little link, and if you knock out that link, you open up the floodgates. I think the Mexican government deports more people than the United States government does, and they do that through Guatemala.
All right, hold that thought, Mike, because when we come back, we're going to turn our attentions to what's happening there, because you're going to want to hear this story. It really is amazing. It's part of the intricate network of problems that we must solve and that we must guide President Trump to solve. He's got so much on his plate, and that's why people like Mike, Center for Security Policy, and all those faithful warriors like Sarah Carter are making a difference, because they're bringing things to the president's attention. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
My guest is Mike Waller, and Mike is an expert on political and counterintelligence, counterterrorism-related issues, but he has psychological warfare. He's a professor. He's written so many books and articles, and also understands the Soviet Union and the ways of the old Soviets who've been, you know, moved into Cuba, and how Fidel Castro became sort of the Pied Piper of the communist movement in the Western Hemisphere. And when he died, it sort of things shifted around, and I think Central and South America kind of were looking for another figurehead, and they may have found some center of gravity and finance and support in the tiny country of Guatemala, which is, and there's a much more to say about this, so please stay tuned. Mike, I don't even know where to start here. Guatemala, as I understand it, has a government, unlike so many Central and South American countries, that's actually an ally to our philosophy as Americans. Is that correct?
Right. It's a democratically elected government. It's a conservative, evangelical Christian president. He not only supports the United States, he likes President Trump. And he is our strongest bulwark in the region against illegal immigration and narcotic smuggling into our country. And our State Department is knocking the legs out from under him.
All right. So he's a natural ally, Guatemala, and we don't have enough allies in Central and South America. So, but this did not start with the Trump administration. It goes back to the Obama administration. Can you explain what happened with Ambassador Todd Robinson, Obama's ambassador to Guatemala?
Sure. It's part of something much bigger. And that is that the State Department stopped recruiting people to be our diplomats to represent the national interests of our country overall, which means defense and security and other issues, and started recruiting people out of the Peace Corps to become our diplomats. Now, while that's all very nice to have Peace Corps-type people representing our country in some places, they overran elements of our Foreign Service, and they tied in with groups funded by the EU and by George Soros and other places to gang up on friendly pro-American governments in the region and to topple them in the way that the communist revolutionary movements never could, through violence. So what they're doing instead is they're using subversion. But what these Soros-funded and EU-funded organizations at the grassroots level could never do is topple their own governments without some support from the top. And they wrote for years about how they needed support from American embassies who can push from the top. And that's what they succeeded doing in Guatemala. So you have a State Department axis with the old Fidel Castro communist guerrilla allies and the George Soros-funded people that are trying to topple the Guatemalan government now and install a revolutionary regime.
Well, that's... And okay, so let's get into the weeds of this, because this is so dangerous. And I think you point out, Mike, that when we when the Arab Spring came, we knew in many cases that the Obama government had actively participated in overthrowing established governments in Egypt and in Syria. Not Syria, they didn't succeed there, but other countries, they undermined the existing powers and caused chaos. But you say that wasn't just happening there. It was happening in Central and South America.
Right, all at about the same time, and it was the same idea. So it was the Obama administration that allied the United States with the Muslim Brotherhood. This is a jihadist movement that generally doesn't use violence. It uses subversion to infiltrate institutions. Allied with the Muslim Brotherhood, assisted the Muslim Brotherhood to overthrow our long-term ally in Egypt and in Tunisia and elsewhere, and install these revolutionary Islamist regimes, which happened for a while in Egypt, and then completely destroyed the miserable stability in Libya, which was unpleasant no matter how you looked at it, but it triggered a lot of the chaos that's been happening ever since, including the whole Benghazi affair. So you have something very similar going on now at the south of our border with the same mentality of State Department people working with the same types of radical groups. It's just a different ideology, but the same type of radicalism, to overthrow established democratic governments south of our border. And this is a big danger to our country.
Absolutely. And now this Ambassador Todd Robinson, that did his own damage, and we'll get into that in just a second, is not there anymore, but you have and in the White House, on the National Security Council, you have a gentleman named Fernando Coots. You have to tell us about him, Mike.
Oh, well, this is part of the thing. Again, you need somebody on top in order to make things happen from down below, and this is just what has happened now. The Obama holdovers are still in power throughout the U.S. government, whether it's in our embassies, which we really can't do much about because they're careerists. But at the very top, who's directing the policy? In the case of the Trump administration, it's a White House staffer named Fernando Coots, who almost nobody has ever heard of, and he likes it that way. But, well, Fernando Coots was originally hired by Ben Rhodes, who was that militant number two person on the Obama National Security Council. He got his master's degree at the Clinton School of Public Service at the Clinton Presidential Library. And from the Clinton Library, he went to the White House National Security Council staff to help Obama to assist the Castro government in Cuba and to help Obama turn a blind eye toward these extremist Marxist movements in the region.
Well,
Trump became, yeah.
And I was just going to expand on Cuba a little bit because just to reaffirm in people's memories, when Barack Obama opened up trade and opened up our relationship with Cuba, it was done at the behest of this Fernando Coots. He's the one that expedited it, right?
Yes. And asked nothing in return from the Cuban government.
Yeah, so that people understand, I think, instinctively how bad that was. So this is the same guy. Now he sits in the White House advising the president. So let's now turn our eyes back to Guatemala. So you've got, let's introduce this other situation. We talked about the government, the fact that they have a good government that's pro-American and conservative in every way. But you've got this silver mine. Tell us about that, because this is fascinating to me.
Oh, yeah. Revolutionary organizations have been doing is they view natural mineral wealth in their country the way Hugo Chavez viewed oil in Guatemala. It's wealth that they can extract to fund revolutionary movements. So Guatemala is very rich in gold and silver and other minerals, and these groups have been agitating to get these mines shut down. Most of the mines are Canadian-owned, because Canada is much more business-friendly toward the mining industry, but some are Australian-owned and some are American-owned or based in the United States. And so what these groups have been doing is having these mass protests to shut down these mines. Now, there's a mine, the company's based in Nevada. It's called Escobal is the name of the mine, brand-new state-of-the-art silver mine. It just opened up a couple of years ago. More than $1 billion investment in there. It's providing thousands of jobs in Guatemala, a lot of revenue, and it's North American shareholders are benefiting too. So it's great all around. These groups targeted that mine for shutdown, but the groups couldn't have done it on their own. They needed friends on the inside of the Guatemalan government. And this is where the American embassy came in. Because with these Soros-funded and EU-funded groups, they were funding some radical networks that had their own left-wing lawyers who were the figureheads of the groups. They got the U.S. Embassy to pressure the Guatemalan government to name them as justices on their Supreme Court and their constitutional court. And our embassy, with Ambassador Todd Robinson, threatened the Guatemalan congressman, saying, if you don't appoint my choices to your court, I will deny you and your family members visas to come to the United States and basically ruin your businesses and your political lives. So that's precisely what happened. The American ambassador under Obama, Todd Robinson, twisted the arms of these Guatemalan members of Congress to appoint these radical judges to the nation's highest courts, which would then hear the lawsuits that their other Soros-funded friends would file against these American and Canadian companies to shut down the mines and ultimately nationalize them and take all the silver and gold for themselves to fund their revolutionary movements. So Todd, that's where we are now.
So Todd Robinson is gone. There's a new ambassador, but Coots is still in place in the White House, and he's still pushing for this.
Yes, and this is the thing about politics. You can do whatever you want in politics when no one else cares and no one else is looking. And so when you have an administration that focuses on Russia, China, North Korea, trade, all kinds of other really big issues, Guatemala is really, really way down the ladder. So nobody's paying attention to the fact that there's an Obama-Clinton holdover inside the Trump White House who's supporting Castro-backed and Soros-backed radicals in this tiny little country and basically overthrowing their government in the name of Donald Trump.
And so if this Ambassador Todd Robinson gets what he started, which was, and he did get, the judge that he wanted to preside over this case, and if she rules against this silver mine, that means, I'm guessing, Mike, that the government of Guatemala, which is actually our friend, will be swept under by the incredible resources of this mine going to the leftists, and which will result in, and I should let you finish the statement, what's going to happen here if the silver mine is taken over by the left?
Well, the mine's already shut down by court order. So what this is going to do is have an effect on collapsing Guatemala's economy. And their economy, it's been doing well. It's been growing at about 4% a year for years. So it will collapse the Guatemalan economy. It will hamstring the Guatemalan president and the Congress. It will then empower these justices. It wasn't just a single judge. It is a group of justices of the entire constitutional court, their highest court in the country. It's like if Soros came and bribed Congress into appointing five members of the U.S. Supreme Court, so he would get a majority every time. And force the president to name, Janet Reno and other types like her onto the Supreme Court. I mean, it's that extreme.
Well, kind of like what happened in Venezuela. This is the kind, same but different of what happened in Venezuela. Outrageous things, disbanding the People's Congress. All right.
The economy's collapse is going to collapse in Guatemala. Investment's going to pull out. What happens then? The Guatemalan government stops being our number one partner in cocaine interdiction from Colombia and elsewhere, and it stops being our main ally to shut down illegal immigration coming from Central and South America into that relatively short border with Mexico up to the United States, really defeating half the purpose of the wall that the president's trying to build. And it's all because of Fernando Coots on the White House National Security Council staff who is making this possible.
You know, Mike, to go back to what we talked about at the top today, you know, you're writing about this, and by the way, we're going to post Mike's. He has two articles in the Daily Caller. The first is Foreign Service Undermines U.S. Businesses While Tillerson Promotes Prosperity, but it's about Guatemala. And then the second one is Trump is going to need a bigger wall, and that's when he talks about what's happening in Guatemala, which is we've just discussed. We'll post both of those on our Facebook page. This all goes to the point that, Mike, this kind of stuff needs to be heard. You're writing about it, and we can only pray the president will hear about this, because heaven knows our friends have been removed from the National Security Council. I don't think have hardly anyone on the inside to talk to him about this stuff. Do you think Tillerson understands this?
I don't think he does. He understands that he sees the State Department as a big corporate structure, which it is, and he's trying to change its function and how it works and where it's not working in American interest. So he's looking at much different big issues. So he's not looking at this. He has not appointed, for example, an Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, which would be monitoring all this stuff in Guatemala. Instead, it's a career State Department official, and these folks don't want to make waves. They know they're only on the job for a short while, and they're not going to make waves, and they're not going to do anything unless they get the political direction to do it, and Tillerson's not providing that direction.
All right, let me just say that Center for Security Policy with, like, Mike Waller is the vice president, Frank Gaffney, you hear every day on this show. I think of John Bolton, who's not part of CSP, but these guys, these national security experts, are slugging away trying to get the information at the president around the people that are kind of closing him off from this good stuff. And we need to, not good stuff, bad stuff, but good information. We need to support them in any way we can. Mike, it's always a pleasure and a privilege to have your expertise. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's great being with you, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.